Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm delighted to have with me in the studio today on University Matters four students, four no less, all from the European Documentation Research Centre. And they've just come back from New York, where they've been doing some exciting work, and I'm looking forward to talking to them. We have Petra Galia de Bono, Laura Muscat, Pavel Yakovlev, and Julia Pisani. Welcome to you all. So, as a kickoff question, I think I'm going to turn to Petra and ask you to give us a bit of an overview of what this event was, the SUNY Model European Union.
It's a simulation where about 300 different students came together from about 20, I think, different universities worldwide, European and non-European, a simulation of the European Council, which is involving the heads of government, and so on and so forth. We had ECOFIN and the COREPER and the foreign affairs ministers coming together to work on a certain agenda that was pre-prepared by the students themselves.
It's like a moot court, European Council, and there are these various functions which are represented. So you've got foreign ministers and you've got prime ministers and people sort of. And how are those chosen? Do you choose those before you go or when you get there?
It depends. Some universities had their lecturers tell them, you know, sort of, listen, you will be taking this role and so on and so forth. But we actually chose between us who would be taking on what role.
The university obviously told us to play Slovenia. Because that was
the University of Malta?
No. University of Newport.
So you were representing Slovenia officially, and then we'll hear later on how that sort of morphed a bit. They chose it perhaps because they thought we were similar small population country, or
well,
why?
Maybe, I don't know, but we were one of the last universities to apply, so it was possibly the last country left, you know.
Because the big ones would have chosen the larger, more interesting. I hesitated to say that, but yes. So you had the Izmir University of Economics was Latvia, if I saw rightly from the website. Jamestown, Sweden. So the big countries were sort of taken up.
Hungary was presiding over the meetings, the Exeter University. They were presiding over the meetings together with, at least in our meetings, they were presiding together with the commissioners. And the commission, I think, was represented by the Buffalo State
and Sunny Newport as well.
How did you actually get involved in the project?
Informed about it by the faculty.
They sent us an email, open to all students of the EDRC basically, and we all applied. At the end, in the beginning, we were only three, myself, Petra and Pavel, and then Julia.
Well, I wouldn't have needed much convincing, I'm sure, if I were a student were faced with this possibility, because I think it does look absolutely fascinating. And it's something that takes place annually, I gather.
Yes, 1 year in an American university, basically one of the sunny universities, and the next year will be in a European university. For example, next year it will be held at the University of Exeter.
There's a transnational agreement, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And when you decided you were going to go, and this year it was at Newport's. Where is it?
Newport's is about 75 miles away from New York City. It's an upstate small town, beautiful town. And I spoke to a few locals over there, and they said it's just, you know, one of those little towns that has its own charm, and it's pretty much university city. Now we got the campus, very big campus, and then you just have the main street and you have sort of small attractions over there.
So it's like a sort of university, it's become a university town.
It is, it is. And you can feel, yeah, you can feel the university vibe in practically everywhere.
But it's quite an old town. I think, if I read rightly, it was founded by the Huguenots. So we're going back quite a long way. So it's by American standards, of course. Yeah. that's quite a long time. Quite a long time ago. I see from the material that I was sort of reading for this chat that you do get an indication before you go about how it's going to be organised, what might be discussed. You are given guidelines in what's called the Blue Book. Mm-hmm. Were you able to do that before you left here in Malta?
Yes, yes, definitely. And the thing is about Blue Book is that, I'm going to be blunt here, about 60% of the Blue Book explains the institutions, the functionality of the institutions, and then another maybe 20% dwells on how the alter egos are adopted, which means that everybody, you know, has an alter ego and you have to act within the limits of the alter ego. Then it goes into how people should behave in the meetings and how you should be a good European. Yeah, I think the trademark goes to Mark Harwood, our professor.
And,
you know, sort of, you don't take the floor for too long, you know, you express your views. If you disagree, you do it in the correct manner. Everybody has the right to speak, you shouldn't intervene.
You wave your flag.
Exactly, wave the flag.
You wave
it. you don't just shout everybody down.
We did a lot of flag waving.
Yes. Something to mention as well, that last 5 days, they sent us a new agenda proposal because of the Libya crisis. The agenda had been set before the Libya crisis. So at the end, it was all set up again, and
wow, exciting. Yes. What were the main features of the agenda before the Libyan crisis came up?
Enlargement.
Immigration.
Which was discussed mainly by the heads of state.
I had border control anyway.
Obviously, they're big issues, border controls and this sort of thing, obviously, would be a big issue. And I'm sure that even without the Libya debacle, you would have had a very interesting discussion anyway. And originally, you were linked, your alter ego was supposed to be Slovenia. And did you do any sort of homework into what attitudes Slovenia might have that might differ from a Maltese perspective?
Well, Slovenia was one of the first, out of the 2004 enlargement countries to hold the presidency. And it held the presidency very well. Slovenia is as well, it's an extremely rich country. It was the first one to, out of the 10 countries that joined 2004, to adopt the euro and join the EMU. Another fascinating thing about Slovenia is that when the crisis hit, and I was representing the ECOFIN, and that was, you know, pretty much on the agenda, we were discussing austerity measures. Slovenia had its own exit strategy ready by 2009. And the indicators have shown that Slovenia is doing very well. So in my functional meetings, in our functional meetings, ECOFIN, Greece was under a lot of heat, Portugal, but Slovenia was agreeing to everything because we had it all figured out by then.
Well, I gather it's a very beautiful country. They've got a bit of sea, but they've got beautiful mountains, and I mean, the landscape's really fantastic. Tourism is wonderful. Yes. So I know that they've...
It's as well as it's quite an industrialized area, and the north of it is affected a lot by the foreign investment, especially from Italy and Germany. So,
and they probably have a window on Eastern Europe and a window sort of
exactly.
on Western Europe as well. So they've got best of both the European worlds, really. When you discussed these issues, you were saying, yeah, no shouting down or whatever, but how did you go about that? I mean, if you were representing a prime minister of Slovenia, did you go into a different workshop with all the prime ministers of the other alter egos?
Yes.
How did that work out?
Yes, we were grouped. Prime ministers were in one room, ECOFIN were in another room, CORPE were in another room, and the foreign ministers were in another room. And we discussed separately. And on the last day, we exchanged our views, the final decision was made by the prime ministers.
You had journalists coming in all the time, the commission intervening, you had heads of government. Once we had the foreign ministers and heads of government join because there was an issue on the Libya crisis, which couldn't.
We could move a motion to have our ministers come into the Hague meeting. And,
yes,
and
we had plenary sessions after each meeting. So you went through it
very thoroughly from all different political points of view, really.
Yes.
And we mentioned before that Slovenia was the original choice of alter ego, but then you actually had to also morph into yourselves and become Malta.
Yes.
How did that happen?
No, actually what happened was that, like I said, or like we've already mentioned earlier, in Corpe we were talking about border control, refugees, social cohesion, all matters that for once Malta actually has a say about, you know, and we should be present in this meeting. Italy took a very good stance towards talking both for Malta and for itself. But what happened was that the University of Bath was meant to come and represent Malta, which I'm sure it would have done a great job doing. But what happened was that they had some problems getting their visas, and they didn't turn up. So last minute, I walked into my meeting and I sat there wanting to say so much and saying, for once, I have something to say and I can't say it. So I walked up to the professor and I asked her, you know, listen, I know this is not normally done, but sort of, can I switch? And she said, no, it isn't normally done, but, you know, I think in this case you're right and Malta does actually need to be represented over here, so sort of, I'll allow it. And I went up to the rest of them and I told them, listen, you know, we can do this if we want to. What do you want to do? They didn't seem too convinced about it. They were, I don't know, maybe sort of settling into their positions, and I said, forget it, not happening. At least the head of government for the final decision. I want my vote.
Like this, you have three votes.
Right? I suppose like this, at least there are two of us in the head of government.
I got permission from my chair, that's the Catherine Ashton, in the foreign minister's meeting, and she told me, yes, go ahead and speak about Malta. I mean, it should be fairly represented. We're talking about immigration, Libya. I mean, we had to talk. I was jumping in my seat.
We practically ended up representing two countries eventually. Most probably bar the two of us, because she was mainly Slovenia and I was mainly Malta towards the end of it. But the two of them sort of...
Yes, it would have been a great pity.
Did a good job supporting the two of us.
Yes. It would have been a bit silly if Malta hadn't been represented at all, especially on those kinds of issues, where, as you say, we actually are very much involved, even in the discussion. We were talking about the conclusions as well. You came to some conclusions about what measures should be taken at the end of the day. Were these decisions that were taken then, When you had the final conclusion document, I suppose there's a conclusion document, how were the conclusions arrived at? Because obviously you had the various sections working separately and then perhaps coming together for the plenary. And did the conclusions come out of this general discussion at the end?
I think the Hungarian presidency was very clever in the heads of government meeting in that he always made sure to mention to us that, you know, this was voted for unanimously by our ministers or ECOFIN or whoever, you know.
Yeah.
So always reminding us, listen, sort of, you have to vote yes now. But there were a couple of interesting moments where, for example, at one point with regards to ECOFIN, the ministers decided something along the lines of allowing non-Eurozone members to participate in a bailout fund.
Yeah.
And this decision came into the heads of government meeting, and France, well, Sarkozy, stood up and had a fit and said, I'm sorry, but this is completely against France's policy. I cannot accept it. Yeah. It has to be changed, or I am definitely voting no, full stop. Quite an interesting moment. I was very impressed, to be very honest with you. We found a compromise eventually, but, you know, sort of...
Another interesting story was when France agreed to share the burden with Malta and Italy regarding immigrants. This is completely impossible.
Sarkozy didn't get up at that
time.
No,
because he wasn't in the foreign minister's meeting. And I was like, are you sure? This is not real. Anyway,
there well, I suppose there it isn't real, is it?
there were this unreal episodes, and
I can imagine. Before we went on air, Pablo, you were talking about financing or bailouts or whatever. What came out of that discussion?
Well, basically, as ECOFIN meetings were, we were discussing austerity measures and seeing how, you know, all the countries can work on it together. And a lot of the issues that were covered, whether the bailouts scheme should affect just the EMU or the whole 27 members, or as the enlargement has shown, maybe more in the years to come. Basically, the whole point of our meeting was that we had to come up with an institution that would approve what we called micro bailouts, instead of maybe, you know, letting country drop and then inject very big amounts into its economy. Maybe we should assist the country along the way by giving smaller amounts. And this institution would be composed out of 27 representatives, which would be most probably bankers, like there are in the ECB. And that institution will have to be approved by European Parliament, which, to be honest with you, I kind of disagreed, and I sent a motion to Maltese and Slovenian head of state saying don't vote on the approval of the European Parliament, because it's just a bit pointless.
Why did you disagree? Explain a bit why you disagreed with that idea.
The thing is, I think that when it comes to certain institutions, and especially an institution that would supervise and evaluate, I don't think we have it in our European setting that there is a need for an approval from the European Parliament, unlike the United States, whereas when there is something, an institution or a function is created, there has to be a vote of Congress on the creation. And that's sort of what came out of that meeting, is that a lot of things were seen from alongside the American institutional system. You know, less European, more American.
In fact, that's a very interesting point, and I'd like to ask a question about that. But before we go on, dare I ask if the enlargement included Turkey in the next 5 years?
Yes, it did.
That went through?
Yes, unanimously. No problem.
Yes. That's really interesting.
Oh, yes. There were quite a few of those that left us, you know, sort of flabbergasted with our mouths wide open, saying, what?
About this, going back to Pavel's point about the American angle on things, I mean, this was an effort. Is an effort on the part of the Americans, that there is an institute for European studies that is interested in keeping American students abreast of attitudes from Europe, so that they have an idea about what the European institutions are all about. What did you find when you got there as far as attitudes were concerned? Did you find that the students on the whole were well informed for a start? Were they in agreement? Did they have, what were the sort of cultural political issues that were different, if there were any?
Quite a few. What happened was that all of us walked in completely green, not knowing what to expect or who we were going to meet or what they know, what we know, do we know enough. So we walked into these meetings and, you know, 2 hours, so on and so forth, we walked out and I just looked at everyone and said, how's it going? And I got, they know so much. And I said, what? Did you actually listen to what they were saying? I mean, like, really listen, not, you know, hear their correct English that sort of sounds like, you know, they could be, you know, President Obama tomorrow.
Exactly.
But listen. And then, you know, the second 2 hours passed and they all came out with a sigh of relief, sort of like, you're right, you know, they're just talking.
When you tried mentioning a directive or a piece of legislation, they were like, let's move on to the next question.
A bit blank.
Yes. Mm. And, I mean, that's what we are learning over here, and we're like, come on, this is the EU. This is what the EU stands on.
But no. you were there really to actually have the function of informing people, the students that weren't so aware perhaps about the institutions. Were they actually receptive to listening to you?
Yes, they were. Once you catch them one-on-one later on, for example, at a social event, you're fine. But then and there, they're in acting mode, they're brilliant actors.
Alter egos.
Very good.
Completely, you know, in line exactly with their alter egos, and that's it, you've had it with them.
That's a lesson, I think, for our students in general to learn. Presenting yourself is...
They focus a lot more on public speaking there with their students.
Yeah. In general. Yes,
one of the things that sort of... as I mentioned previously, we had our meeting as well. One of the members presiding over it was the commissioner for ECOFIN. And usually, in my understanding, a commissioner would be extremely, you know, active in meetings, and you know, commission as the primary legislator would be all there going, you know, putting some giving in some input. And being active. And then I had a conversation with the alter ego of José Manuel Barroso, and I said, you should have a look at your commissioners and urge them to be more active. And the next day was a bit more productive in that sense. You know, we had the commissioner giving the input and then interviewing where it had to be, so productive.
Before, you mentioned social activities. I think that we can't let that side of things pass, because it is part of the whole point of getting together young people, networking, getting to know each other. I mean, were the peripheral activities fun? Did you enjoy it from that point of view?
Yes. They were really organized.
Silly things for us, like... you know, he was mentioning frat houses and whatnot. One night we were invited to a party at a house. And I just stood there saying, oh my God, it's not just on TV. I'm actually here. And they just stood there laughing at me, you know, like, what on earth are you on about? And I said, wait a second, you need to understand, I come from miles away. And I watch TV and I see these parties on TV. Now I'm actually standing here. This is surreal.
You see the differences as well.
No, it's literally, you know, I felt like I was in a sitcom, for example, you know?
That sounds good.
So how do you party? Like, we house parties, like, with wine, we socialize really quietly, and... Oh, we drink beer.
We thought it sounded rather boring.
Yes, boring and very serious and very prim and proper. That's how they saw us. Very formal.
What about your days in New York? Tell me about that. I know that you had a whirlwind 3 days. What did you do when you were there? Did you take a bus and go all the way,
around?
Or? We walked and walked and
planned it.
Spent half our cash on cabs.
Yes. We planned it before, though. We knew where we were going, the restaurants we were going to eat. We planned it very well.
I think credit got to go to you in most of the places.
Both of you. I followed.
Research has friends who live there, and so we did quite a good plan. We started, like, for example, from Central Park. Mm-hmm. Walked for about half an hour, 1 hour, took some pictures, saw everything, let's go. Then off to the Met, 3 hours, saw everything, yes, let's go. That's how it was. It was
I was going to dare the question, did you go to any galleries? So
did.
You did go to
some
galleries. You have two fanatics over here, and one who just, like I said, follows and says, let's go to a musical later.
Yes. Yes, we did go to a musical.
We went to the Met.
Yes, we went to the Met. And I've been wanting to go to the Natural Museum, but we heard that from one of the cab drivers that if you just run through all the exhibitions, and all through all 9 stories of the museum, you'd need 2 days. So we couldn't risk that. And we'd get carried away over there.
Yeah.
But then we saw Sister Act.
Wow, he got it right.
Yes, for once after all this time.
That's good. But a bit of everything, I suppose.
Yes,
I mean, that's
the
important thing.
We ran up the Empire State Building.
My goodness.
Yes, we did. We had 2 days We had very bad weather. It was foggy, it was raining, cloudy, and you couldn't see anything. The day when we had to go to New Paltz, the sun came out. It was
hot,
visibility was awesome. And went up to the 86th floor and said, oh my god, it's 1 o'clock. At 1:50, you have to catch the train. Run down there.
So ran all the way down, took the lift.
We still missed the train.
Still missed the train.
Never mind, these are the fun bits. Well, in the last minute we've got, I'm going to go around each of you and ask you what you got out of it. What did you bring back from New York, really, as an experience?
Motivation. When you look at those skyscrapers of thousands and thousands of employees and all working hard, and it's just very...
It makes you feel as though you want to do the same thing.
Yes.
You got that kind of New Yorkers going places atmosphere.
Yes.
And you, Papa?
Well, I think diversity, which just runs within New York State culture, because we've been, you know, New York and New Paltz. And another thing that I brought back is contact, which I'm hoping that I'm going to be using sometime soon.
That's great. And Petra?
Ever the drama queen. I just came back revitalized and feeling 16 again.
And you, Laura?
I was inspired by the city. Creativity and the drive to move forward, do things. Like Pavel and Petra, networking, contacts. It's the city where everything happens.
It does things to you.
Yes.
Yes, I've heard that about New York. I haven't been there myself, but I know that that's the sort of the attitude. Well, I'm sure that your professors and the European Documentation Research Centre here at the University of Malta will be delighted when they hear this interview on Campus FM. Delighted to hear that you got something out of it. You got a lot out of the whole experience, both in New York itself and at the actual event that you went to.
Just one last thing. We'd like to thank everybody at the EDRC, Professor Roderick Parch, Dr. Harwood, also Professor Kathleen Dowley from Sunny New Paltz, and also the American Embassy, who kindly helped us sponsor the trip.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Petra Gallia de Bono, Laura Muscat, Pavel Yakovlev, and Julia Pisani for being with us today. Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.